On any given day in Australia, about 40,000 people are in prison, which means there's a decent chance that you know someone or you've been someone who's been in that group at some stage. And the idea, of course, is that they serve their time and then they come back out and try to reintegrate into the community. But Norman, as we discussed a few weeks ago, there's evidence that any brush with the legal system is linked to worse health outcomes for people. And not only that, it turns out that they're at real risk right at the time that should be the most promising for them, which is right when they're released. So this research that I'm about to share with you looked at data from 8 countries around the world, more than 1.4 million prisoners, and they found that the couple of days after they're released was when they were most vulnerable to dying of any cause. I've been chatting with lead researcher Rowan Borschmann.
The highest rates were during the first few days when people are released. So literally, as they are released from the gate, they're at the highest risk of death. And that went down sort of day by day and then week by week after that. And the leading causes of death during the first week were overdose and suicide. And I suppose it's not difficult to see why that might be the case if people have stopped using illegal substances while they're incarcerated, and then they come back out and start using the same amount while their bodies reduce the tolerance while they're incarcerated. So that could lead to an overdose, for example. And with suicide, unfortunately, I'm guessing that for a lot of people that get out, it's more difficult than they had anticipated. And so, sadly, that can be one avenue that people turn to. So they were the two leading causes of death during the first week.
Interpersonal violence was another one, which I suppose you don't have to think hard to see how that could happen. But the one that I was quite curious about was cardiovascular disease. What's happening there?
Yeah, so cardiovascular disease was the third leading cause of death during the first week, and that rate actually got higher and higher as time went on. So some of the studies that we included, the follow-up time was up to 24 years. So obviously the people are going to be 24 years older than when they were released. So I think during the first week, again, it's probably not difficult to see that getting out of prison or jail can be a very big shock and might precipitate some sort of heart attack or a cardio event that could lead to death. So it's not something that you would immediately think of as being related to being incarcerated, but being released can be, for the reasons I mentioned before, a very big shock to the system.
Right. So this is a human rights issue, and it's a health issue, and it's a health funding issue, because these are humans who are also requiring resources when they encounter these difficulties. What kind of actions are you calling for?
Well, from a prison healthcare provider perspective, there are three really concrete steps that they can take to prevent a good portion of these deaths. So first, prison healthcare providers can and should routinely assess each person's health status and identify their healthcare needs every time they enter prison. And that can obviously lead to initiating healthcare. Second, they can provide a standard of healthcare in prison that's at least equivalent to what's available in the surrounding community. And that treatment should be provided free of charge, and it should be provided without any kind of discrimination on the grounds of legal status. And third, when people are released or when they're getting ready to be released, they can support a healthier transition back to the community by once again conducting a comprehensive needs assessment and then coordinating the transitional healthcare around the time of release. So given that suicide and overdose were the two leading causes in our study, obviously this kind of care needs to include coordinated substance use treatment and mental health care treatment that would extend beyond simply prescribing psychotropic medication, for example, but really getting into some in-depth treatment.
What would it take to resource that?
It's a very good question, but there are several reasons why we should be doing more to help improve the health and reduce mortality amongst this population. And one of them is funding, purely from an economic standpoint. Even if you don't care about the human rights issue or the public safety perspective, you probably will care that it's considerably cheaper to keep people out of prison and keep them healthy than it is to lock them up and contribute to poor health outcomes. So, in Australia, I think we spend about $6 billion on criminal justice and incarceration. And so if even a proportion of that was sort of diverted to be able to provide better health care and better transitional health care, I'm sure we'd see a better return on investment, which, again, it absolutely shouldn't come down to that. But quite often, sadly, that's where you see results.
I actually spoke to your co-author, Stuart Kinner, from Curtin University, only a couple of months ago about the fact that people entering the legal system have a higher baseline risk of health problems anyway. So is intervening at that point kind of too late?
Yeah, for some people it can be too late. And it's interesting because, you know, there's this commonly held perception that prison is bad for you and bad for your health. And the best available international evidence at the moment really suggests that incarceration has little impact on health, either positively or negatively. So if a person goes into prison with poor health, they're typically going to come out with poor health. And so, you know, on that basis, we're kind of viewing incarceration as a missed opportunity, really, to improve health outcomes, including especially preventing deaths in those people who are most at risk. And again, that gets back to things like community healthcare providers being able to proactively engage with people before they're released, continuity of care, and, you know, prevent people relapsing to health risk behaviours such as self-harm and suicide attempts and, you know, risky substance use.
Rowan Borschmann is a professor in the Centre for Mental Health and Community Wellbeing at the University of Melbourne.
Stream any ABC radio station live and on the go. Discover new podcasts, music and audiobooks, all free on the ABC Listen app.